I call the Workforce Health Committee to order. We do not have minutes from last week, so we will not move the minutes. Hey, I need this room quiet, please. I have a hearing going on. Thank you. We have House File 5205, the Workforce Bill. Representative Hassan will move that House File 5205 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. I will move the DE1 amendment from myself before adopting DE1. We will have staff do a brief walkthrough of the bill in a spreadsheet from nonpartisan staff. So, Ms. Eng and Mr. Cope.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I will start by looking at the DE1 language in Article 1. And then I'll move to a walkthrough of the spreadsheet. With Article 1, starting on 1.12, this sets the base for the general support services as the lower amount. This change is reflected on line 74 and 75 of the spreadsheet. Then jumping to page 2, line 2.3, this change cancels the second year appropriation, fiscal year 25. And appropriates the $5.5 million with extended available until date. Now, looking at page 3, section 3, I'll move over to a walkthrough of the spreadsheet. Starting on line 26 of the spreadsheet, $550,000 in fiscal year 25 is to Sabathany Community Center. $700,000 is to Shakopee Workforce Pilot Program. $2 million is for P Fund. $200,000 is for Boulder Options. $200,000 is for Greater Minneapolis Council of Churches. $255,000 is for the International Institute of Minnesota. $350,000 is for the City of Austin. $200,000 is for the Jobs Foundation. $280,000 is for Hired. $100,000 is for Equispace. $1 million is for Lakeview Methodist Healthcare. $500,000 is for Change Starts with Community. $1 million is for African Immigrants Community Services. $1 million is for Women Venture. $1 million is for the Minnesota Black Chamber of Commerce. On page 2 of the spreadsheet, $375,000 is for Meat Cutting and Butchery Training Grants. $75,000 is for Inspire MSP. $150,000 is for Summit Academy OIC. $250,000 is for Karan Organization of Minnesota. $100,000 is for Indigenous Roots and Cypherside Dance School. $100,000 is for Ramsey County and the Milestone Community Development. $100,000 is for Ramsey County and People in Action. $700,000 is for the Metro Youth Divergence Center. $174,000 is for Duluth Middle School Computer Program. $171,000 is for Proctor Public Schools Program. $100,000 is for Lake County Ambulance Services. $1 million is for the City of Brooklyn Park. $1 million is for the Somali Community Resettlement Services. $750,000 is for Riverside Plaza Tenant Association. $150,000 is for the African Career Education Resource Incorporated. $150,000 is for Organization of Liberians in Minnesota. $180,000 is for Equitable Development Action. $50,000 is for Oromo Community of Minnesota. $50,000 is for Kajug. $300,000 is for Theater Moo. $100,000 is for the Center for African Immigrants and Refugees Organization. $450,000 is for the YWCA of St. Paul. $50,000 is for United Senior Lao American. $100,000 is for Hmong American Farmers Association. $240,000 is for MN Zeg Zog. $250,000 is for Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership. And $300,000 is for Ramsey County. And then finally on line 78, 79, and 80, there's $250,000 for the Center for Nursing Equity and Excellence.
Thank you. Next, we will have Mr. Cope walk through the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Justin Cope, House Research. I'm going to briefly discuss some small changes to the appropriations article that would be in H5205A4 if adopted. And these are changes from the spreadsheet Ms. Ang just walked through. So on page 1, line 3 and 4 of the A4, the appropriation for the City of Brooklyn Park increases from $1 million to $2 million and adds an eligible use to include expenditures on the Brooklyn Park Small Business Center. Page 1, line 5, removes an appropriation for the Somali Community Resettlement Services. Page 1, lines 7 and 8, changes the name of the recipient of grant funding from Oromo Community of Minnesota to HRFA International. And the page 1, lines 9 and 10, change in that amendment adds Higher Works Collaborative as a fiscal agent for the Center for African Immigrants and Refugees Organization. And now I'll move on to Article 2. Sections 1 through 4 of Article 2 modify the Minnesota Job Creation Fund so that provisions for new full-time employees would also apply to new full-time equivalent employees. Section 5 would expand the definition of dislocated worker for the purposes of the state dislocated worker program to include certain spouses of active duty United States Armed Forces members, injured and ill individuals without workers' compensation cases needing support to reenter or remain in the workforce, and adults with low income, adults receiving public assistance, and adults deficient in basic skills. Section 6 modifies the definition of community-based organizations for the purposes of the Targeted Populations Workforce Grants Program to remove a requirement that a qualifying nonprofit organization have an annual budget of no more than $1 million. Section 7 expands the definition of non-covered employment for the purposes of the unemployment insurance chapter to include employment of a foreign agricultural worker working on an H-2A visa for the purpose and then employers with that change would not pay unemployment insurance taxes on the wages of a temporary agricultural worker on an H-2A visa. Section 8 modifies an appropriation for a grant to Santa Foundation that was made in Laws 2023 to extend its availability until June 30, 2027 and to allow use of the program on both out-of-school and summer programs. Section 9 removes a deadline for the Commissioner of Management and Budget in consultation with the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development to transfer monies between various deed accounts. Section 10 outlines rules for the use of the Chain Starts with Community Violence Prevention Program appropriation. It would require them to develop and implement job training programs for at-risk youth and adults and to create on-site job opportunities at Chilo Care's food shelf. It require partnerships with the Cargill Foundation for support services for youth and with Hennepin County Juvenile Corrections and the Minneapolis Police Department to get referrals for at-risk youth and would require a report on the use of the grant. Section 11 would establish a Center for Nursing Equity and Excellence within the University of Minnesota and require the center to develop a plan for nursing workforce supply to collect data on nursing faculty and employment and to improve and modify practices for educating nurses and prospective nurses. And it would also require an annual report on the center to the legislature. Section 12 establishes a pilot program within DEED that would award grants to the Shakopee Chamber of Commerce for scholarships to students and programs approved by the Dakota Scott Workforce Development Board, and it would require a partnership with Minnesota State Colleges and Universities and local employers so that at least 25% of the scholarships awarded under the program would be matched with employer or foundation funds. Students receiving the scholarship would need to adhere to any promulgated program requirements and also sign a contract agreeing to fulfill a 3-year full-time employment commitment in the service area of the Shakopee Chamber of Commerce and would need to get employment following graduation either with an employer who provided a match to the program or in a high-demand occupation as determined by the Dakota Scott Workforce Development Board. Section 13 requires the revisor's office to codify the paragraph modified in Section 6, which allows Section 9, which allows transfers between certain deed funds. And Section 14 repeals limitations on administrative costs, training services, training assistance costs, and support services costs for the purposes of the dislocated worker program. And Mr. Chair and members, that concludes the walkthrough.
Thank you, Mr. Cope. Folks, this morning we're going to hear from community members. So first on the agenda will be the Ramsey County folks. So if you are here, please come to the testifying table. Welcome Commissioner Moran and Ms. Ling Becker. Please state your name for the record and proceed. And welcome back, Commissioner Rena Moran.
So good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Rena Moran, Ramsey County Commissioner, District 4. And I just want to thank you today for the hard work that you and your committee has done. I know in Ramsey County, the work that we do to really implement what has come down from the state is great, and it varies a lot. Workforce has played a critical role in getting resources into our community, creating jobs and training. It's just an array of wonderful, wonderful work that we have an opportunity to do and work with the underserved, underrepresented, diverse communities, young folks, our youth, just doing awesome, awesome work to make sure that they are a part of building up themselves, their families, and their community. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for allowing so many communities that have not been seen in the past to be seen and to be invested in. The best social service program that we can do, and we do a lot of social programs at the Ramsey County level, because we are a county that believes that government has a role to make people's lives better. But one of the best social service programs that we can do and have is a job in preparing people for great jobs and livable wage jobs. So we want to say thank you for your work. I wanted to come by personally to say thank you for your work and for your leadership on workforce. And with that, we have our awesome director, Lean Becker, here from Ramsey County to just show and share some of the great work that we're doing and to say thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Commissioner Moran. Ms. Becker, please state your name for the record and proceed with the testimony.
Yeah, good morning, Chair Zhang, committee members. My name is Ling Becker. I'm the Director of Workforce Solutions for Ramsey County. In that role, I'm also the Executive Director of the Workforce Innovation Board of Ramsey County, which also serves the City of St. Paul through a joint powers agreement. As was expressed by the Commissioner, Moran, thank you so much for the opportunity to address you this morning. Ramsey County has been committed to ensuring workforce resources are provided to our community and also to support the employer talent needs in our community. With an ever increasing diverse workforce, we know that strategies continue to have to be delivered through community partners in partnership with the county, and that is something that we've been really engaged with, is to partner with community-based organizations as a government entity in order to serve those residents. In addition, we also are seeking support to do meaningful work directly serving job seekers who have barriers to employment when it comes to Justin's involvement, and also improving their digital skills in order to be able to access the jobs of the future and to be able to participate in training programs and education. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions about the programs. Mohammed Bameen is not here today, but we are also speaking on behalf of a Milestone Community Development. They've done excellent work in the community getting East African young adults into career pathways in technology. So,
any member questions? Seeing none, well, thank you, Commissioner and Ms. Becker, for being this morning.
Thank you.
For the work that you're doing at the county. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next is the Black Chamber of Commerce. Are folks here yet? All right. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
All right. Good morning, Chair Zhang. My name is Sam and committee and community members. My name is Sam Nadelli, Executive Board Chair for the Minnesota Black Chamber of Commerce. Again, I just wanted to thank you all for your time this session and in working with us and hearing us on this request for an appropriation for the Black Chamber. Black Chamber, as I stated before, we're celebrating our 20th anniversary here in the state of Minnesota. And really what we're focusing on is how do we continue to serve the entire state of Minnesota with expansions and programming in greater parts of Minnesota like Rochester, Duluth, Mankato. And this appropriation is going to help us get that work started with the programming and the partnerships that we're looking to do. We also are looking to enhance some of our existing programs. We're launching our 10,000 Black Business Program later this year. We also are launching our youth entrepreneur programs. And then we also want to continue some of our community educational programs to educate our members about some of the emerging markets here in the state of Minnesota in regards to cannabis, clean energy, med tech, things like that. So this resources will be able to help us achieve some of those goals. So I just wanted to echo thanks again to Representative Frazier, Representative Hassan for your support and all the other members of the committee.
Thank you for being here. A question from Lee Baker.
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And thank you. I've had a really good conversation earlier with the folks from the Minnesota Black Chamber. And again, I know when they were in the chair last time, I don't recall if it was you or if it was another individual, but I'm excited about what you're doing. The request has doubled since you were here last. It's changed a lot. Can you explain to me what changed between the first testimony and now? Are you just doubling the people you're going to reach? Is there something new that has changed and transpired since the last testimony?
Yeah, so to my knowledge, I know when we came to the House, we had requested the $500,000 for 4 years consistently. And I believe that's remained the same, actually, if I'm not mistaken. Is there new information that I'll
have? Answer that question. The issue was that it was $500,000 for the next 4 years, which would be a total of $2 million. So instead of being in a base, we were able to get it down to $1 million to cover the ask that originally was $500,000 for 4 years. So instead of $2 million, we took it down to $1
million. Okay. I must have read that wrong. It looked like it had doubled, and so maybe it didn't
so
get
it was
right,
$500,000 so. Per year for 4 years to be in the base, but we put it down to.
Okay, so that one didn't double and change, so that but you actually kind of trimmed it a little bit, is what you did.
Yeah, we
cut
did.
It in half then. Okay. All right.
If there's anything extra we can squeeze in there, I'll take
it. I appreciate that. No, I'm just trying to ask some of those changes that we've seen. So thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you so much for your support and your interest in the bill. Thank you. Any other questions? All right. Thank you all so much. Have a great day.
Thank you. Next is Apichok King Singha from the United Senior Lao American Association. Good morning and welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and member. My name is Apichok Kai Singh, and I am an executive director of the United Senior Lao American. So the bill that we are trying to do is for the college readiness program that is will help prepare the youth to graduate from the high school and matriculate into the college of their choice. So what is the program responsibility that we are trying to do is, number one, is the college preparation workshop. So this is for preparing youth grade 10 to 12 to improve their performance on the SAT and ACT. Second is the general education tutoring workshop to improve their academic performance. And third is a human development workshop. This is for expanding youth social, emotional, and the awareness. And number four is a train workshop. This is for developing a wider global understanding of how the world works through the exploring a range of the current of the Lao community event. So this bill is approximately run over 30 weeks. So this is what we are trying to accomplish at the Lao community. So thank you, Mr. Chair and the member. Yep. Any question?
Thank you, Mr. Kling Singha. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Kling Singha. Next is Tashidi Wako from HIRPHA International. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, committee members. My name is Tashidi Wako. I'm a board chair of HIRPA International. HIRPA is to mean to support one another, and it's to work primarily with Oromo youth in the Twin Cities in the areas of youth engagement, mental health outreach, and the scholarship programs. And our request is for $50,000. Well, it's a drop in the you know, large budget, but to start with. And the funds will be used for staffing for youth outreach, mental health services, and substance use disorders that our kids are, you know, getting exposed to, that we need to intervene. Teaching trades to high school students through apprentice, that's what we would like to do, and finding a win-win solution for the youth to navigate their choices during high school and after. Design culturally specific parental involvement in youth programs. That's what we would like to do, and we'll be honored for your support and for giving us the time and opportunity, particularly getting for a kind of disadvantaged community to be heard and to be served. And early intervention to the future workforce is very important. I really appreciate Chair and committee members for this work, and thank you so much for your support.
Thank you. Discussion. Zeno, thank you very much for being here this morning.
Thank you. Thanks.
Next is Tim Zunker from the Shakopee Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, and good morning. My name is Tim Zunker. I am the president for the Shakopee Chamber and Visitors Bureau and serve on the board of directors for the Shakopee Chamber Foundation. I appreciate the opportunity to testify and want to thank the chair and Representative Hassan, Representative Tapke, and the committee for inclusion of our workforce scholarship program in House File 5205. The Shakopee Area Workforce Scholarship Pilot Program will help bridge the skills gap in Scott County while implementing a public-private partnership to create upward mobility with a focus on occupations in demand. We'll work with the Dakota Scott Workforce Development Board, partner colleges and universities, and identify areas of need based off data from the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development, work with the area colleges to tailor the programming to fit these occupations in demand, and fill cohorts to create opportunity for individuals. Specifically, this appropriation will allow us to assist in creating better opportunities for the underserved and underrepresented in Scott County. Based off the county profile from DEED, the unemployment rate for individuals who identify as Black or African American is 10.5%, which is higher than the state average of 8.7%. In addition, for individuals who identify as Hispanic or Latino, the unemployment rate is 7.6% in Scott County, which is higher than the state average of 6.3%. By working with our nonprofit community in Scott County, including MICASA and the Community Resource Center, the scholarship program will allow us to assist in creating better opportunities for the underserved and underrepresented in the county. In addition to our current workforce efforts with Shakopee Public Schools, the Scott County CDA, and other workforce initiatives, the scholarship pilot program will allow us to expand these current initiatives to train and retain our current and future workforce in the county while providing us the resources to provide additional opportunities for those most in need. Again, thank you for inclusion of our scholarship program in House File 5205 and the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Lead Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, thank you for the presentation. Have you received any dollars from this, from the state before for this kind of a workforce project?
We have not.
Mr. Zunker.
This is your first.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, we have not.
Okay, so the first time.
Lead bigger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what was it that triggered your thoughts to come here and to kind of work on this project? Was there something that you're seeing in your community that's different from maybe, you know, years past? What brought you here to us?
Mr. Zunker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, a shift in the organization structure and how we look at the demand and needs of workforce in our community, just an overall, just that growing demand in workforce, then the training and retaining, and then also more work with our nonprofit community and the understanding of the workforce needs in the county. So this would give us, with the shift in what our organization is looking at, from very heavy workforce opportunities, creating opportunities for individuals in not only Shakopee but Scott County. We just saw this as an opportunity to create that public-private partnership with the businesses, the Workforce Development Board, the CDA, our public schools, et cetera, to create these opportunities.
Lead Baker.
Thank you. It's interesting that we're seeing some new folks from the chambers, really the chamber kind of organizations in working on these things. So I just wanted to find out what kind of triggered that. So I appreciate your comments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, thank you, Mrs. Zunker, for being here.
Thank you.
Next is Scott Redd from the Sabathany Community Center. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Zone, community members. Glad to be here today. My name is Scott Redd, and I'm president and CEO of Sabathian Community Center, where our mission is to provide people of all ages and cultures with the essential resources to inspire them to improve their life and to build a thriving community. And we've been doing that for 58 years now. Over 150,000 people walk through our doors. I was asked a question, what this bill means to the people of South Minneapolis. It means access to careers that can pay a livable wage. It means reducing the number of community members living, the 80% of the members that we serve, living below the federal poverty guideline. It means transforming our community from one that's striving to surviving. You know, it's interesting that we just had a graduation class, and 92% of our folks graduated. And from our employment program, meaning that they're going off to get great careers, right? We partner with Excel Energy for training folks to be line workers. That salary for those folks is $50 an hour, average salary. That means folks are leaving our community making $100,000 with just a high school diploma. That means that folks can actually. We don't talk about the American dream at Sabathany. We talk about the American reality. And the American reality is that if you work hard, if you prepare yourself and train yourself to be ready for the future, that reality will be there. So we don't have time to sleep and dream about what can be. We're busy doing it, and we're busy putting people to work. This opportunity will allow us to move from serving 80 people a year to being able to serve over 200 people a year. To us, that's an investment, a return on investment in putting people to work and building a stronger economy. We appreciate the opportunity of Chair Zhang and Representative Hassan and Representative Fraser vetting us to be at this table today and to be in this conversation, and we 100% appreciated and approve of this bill, and appreciate any funds that we can receive to do this work and put people to work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Redd, for coming and echoing on those words. Somebody who's represents that district and lives four blocks away from Sabathany Community Center. I am happy that we're doing this work because I know that Sabathany Community Center and what it means for that community. It's a pillar in our community. It's a center for hope. It's a place where people come to, get resources, get connected to services. And I like what you said about it's not American dream, it's American reality, because the reality is different for our urban core community that has been through so much. For somebody from South Minneapolis with a high school diploma to get a small training that would allow them to make $100,000, that is music to my ears. So thank you for this work.
Further discussion? Seeing none, thank you very much for being here this morning. Have a good day.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Next is On to Fame from Peter Moo. Good morning. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, yes. Thank you. My name is Anh Thu Pham. I'm the managing director of Theater Mu. First of all, thank you, Chair Zong, Vice Chair Brand, and members of the Workforce Committee for giving us a space to talk about this house file. Theater Mu was founded in 1992 as an Asian American theater, and it's the largest Asian American theater in the Midwest. We have had a training program for artists since our inception in 1992 and have trained over 450,000 Minnesotans through this program. Annually, we train 2,000 people through this program. Currently, our workforce training programs, we have our MU Training Institute, which provides trainings for Minnesota-based Asian American artists in early stages of their career. It's on the job training. We have classes, the on-the-job training is our MU fellowships, and then we have our MU Training Institute, which is classes trained by mentors in the field, and it provides to develop classes in many theatrical disciplines from acting to directing and other fields. And then the third one is we have our MU Emerging Playwright Circle, which is a development cohort for early playwrights. Theater MU is also committed to economic justice for all Minnesotans to make sure that people can attend our programs. And we supplement not just the training programs and the classes, but we also supplement our performances. These fellowship programs, we work with local colleges and universities to have internships and fellowships for the local colleges and internships, so that for new artists trying to break into the field, where it's about who you know and the experience, it's a funnel to get into the field, and our MU Stories residencies, which we work with K through 12 schools and the libraries, and it works with English language learner, ELL, immigrant, and refugee students to build school skills, confidence, and pride in telling their own stories using theater, speaking, and writing practices. In MU Explorations, our students through grades 3 through 12, it helps them to learn theater skills along with Asian American history. They likely won't be taught in schools as it may be culturally specific. And both programs were written with the assistance of evaluation and curriculum specialists here. And it helps students, especially ELL students, adapt to life in Minnesota. These training programs are specifically intended to keep talented Asian American artists in Minnesota and not to move to larger metropolitan areas. Theater MU currently only has one administrative area and a small rehearsal space. Our limitation on these programs is really our ability to schedule things within this our program space or being able to rent other theater spaces. And so we're asking for the Workforce Committee to support the House file. Sorry, I have the number here. 5064. To look at funding to investigate the physical and financial feasibility of moving towards a capital campaign work. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pham. Discussion. See you now. Thank you very much for being here this morning. Next is Jansen Hain from the Hmong American Farmers Association. Good morning. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with the testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jansen Hang. I'm the executive director with the Hmong American Farmers Association. We are a nonprofit organization that was created to advance the economic prosperity of Hmong American farmers and their families in Minnesota. Our mission to enhance their capacity, grow their self-sufficiency, so that ultimately they can build themselves into generational community wealth. Hmong farmers make up over 50% of the produce vendors in Twin Cities Farmers Market. But despite their hard work and skills, Hmong farmers continue to be disadvantaged when it comes to accessing land, capital, credit, research, training, and especially new product and new markets. The Hmong American Farmers Association requesting funds to support a bicultural, bilingual training program for Hmong American farmers around hemp production. This training program will further workforce readiness, employment, and entrepreneurial exploration and skill development around hemp production, processing, and marketing. Hemp is a growing industry, and Minnesota is making huge investment with possible three large processing plants being built in the next 3 years or the next year. This makes sense because hemp is such a versatile plant. Its stalks can be processed into fibers or mixed with lime and sand to create hempcrete, or seed is pressed and used for culinary, medicinal purposes, and oil. But the problem is that we need more producers. In 2019, there were 353 hemp growers in Minnesota. But by 2023, the number had fallen to 128, with growers exiting the market for cannabis productions instead. This is a huge appetite for hemp product, but we need more people who are trained in growing, harvesting, and processing it. And HAFA believe that the solution can be found in our farmers and their family members. Hemp is not new to the Hmong community, as our ancestors have been growing hemp to make fiber for traditional clothing or special oils. But our farmers must be trained on how to grow hemp for Minnesota climate, and they must be educated about the rules and regulations in our state. Mr. Chair and member of the committee, thank you for your commitment to advance vibrant economic opportunities and for supporting funding the Hmong American Farmers Association in the creation of a bilingual, bicultural training program around hemp production.
Thank you, Mr. Hang. A discussion on the Hmong American Farm Association bill. Seeing none, thank you very much for being here, Mr. Hain. Next is Riverside Plaza Tenant Association. Good morning and welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair and Vice Chair. My name is Isaac Ahmed. I'm currently IT instructor at Riverside Tenant Association. Riverside Plaza Tenant Association has been operating for the benefit of the Riverside community since 1986. Riverside offer advocacy services for tenant and ESL services for adults and youth in the community. In addition, RIPTA provide a variety of community services assistance, assisted individual in secure employment such as basic adult education, workforce training, and assistance with employment forms. For the past few years, RIPTA has been offering IT career training classes to help students gain the necessary skills to pursue a career in IT field. The program is regularly updated with current job market needs. Students receive support through the classroom instructions, guidance from instructors, and certification exams preparation, and hands-on practical training support. They also receive assistance with resume writing, job preparation interviews, and other aspects of career preparation. I participate in the IT training program offered by the Riverside Tenant Association. I was part of the first batch to take the program and complete all the training in 9 months. I earned certifications, CCNA, Palo Alto Security certifications, Checkpoint certifications, CompTIA Network Plus, and VMware certifications. I also mentor others in the community who are interested pursuing a career in the IT field. Riverside is requesting one-time appropriation to help support the workforce program as they build the capacity to launch the new youth build program. And actually, before I came to the Riverside and get training for the IT, I was a limo driver for the Minneapolis and St. Paul. I grew up in Riverside area, and the area it's very poverty. There's a lot of youth that's missing opportunity for the American dream. So Riverside gave me the opportunity to take part of this training for the IT. And I pursued all the training for the certifications. I got hired for a company name, Accurative, as a network support for the network side. Now I'm actually a company called Atlios, which is actually a security analysis junior level, and also instructor part-time, just to put back with the community for the training that the youth needed in the Riverside area especially, so they can pursue the American dream and they can get a better job for their life and the community that's surrounding. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Sure. I'm Rebecca Nett, and I'm Operations and Compliance Director at Riverside Plaza Tenant Association. So if there's any additional questions, I'd be happy to talk about it. We are looking for a one-time appropriation to help us build capacity. We have been getting grants through DEED and Youth Build for particular programs. But we also need help with building capacity to be able to add to our staff to support the program and to, you know, help our program to grow.
Thank you. Lead Baker.
Mr. Chair, I just want to say good job on this. I really do support this project. I know I've been down to Riverside a few times, and is it Mr. Ahmed? Did I say that right?
Yes.
Great work on this. It sounds like you're ready to be a professor next. You're doing a lot of things. So congratulations. And I know that helping young people there especially is our most critical touch point with that community. So thank you for all you're doing, and I really do support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, thank you very much for being here this morning.
Thank you.
Next is Shalalia Abdul Brown from Change Starts the Community. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair John. Good morning, committee. I am Jalila Abdul Brown, Executive Director of Change Starts with Community.
Go ahead and proceed.
Okay. So we are here for an appropriation for our youth program that we have in North Minneapolis. We work throughout the city, but our goal is to reduce, interrupt, and prevent violence. We always say the best violence prevention is a job. We did a pilot program last year with Cargill, and we partnered and we took in 23 at-risk youth who had went through the probation system. Some had run-ins with the law already, and we gave all 23 jobs. We had a 0% recidivism rate with those that were on probation, and then we also have a 0% death rate. We actually have youth there right now who are working on Broadway, West Broadway, North Minneapolis, and because of what we're doing, we saw the crime decline 40% because we took in some of the most at-risk youth who were doing a lot of the carjackings, stealings, guns, and our partnership is with Shiloh Temple. And then so the appropriation will help us sustain this program and then also take it down the line. So we're here today. We've never had any state funding. Cargill and the CEO has been solely funding this out of their pocket. So we know that it works. Bishop Howe, he's been funding this. So we're looking at sustaining this program. So we're here today, but you may see us again in the future.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for record and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman John. I'm Bishop Richard D. Howell, Jr. I serve Shiloh Temple International Ministries Parish. We've been located in that same location, North Minneapolis, for over 20 years now. It's an honor for us to be here today, and we're certainly grateful for Change Starts with Community, for the work that they are doing in the community. There are three principles we look at: emancipate, educate, and employ. And in those areas, we are doing the work, feeding over 9,000 families a month in that community, has already been testified, and greater work is on the docket to do a greater work.
Thank you. Any discussions? Seeing none, thank you so much for being here this morning.
Thank you.
Next is A. Ta Ku from the Karen Organization of Minnesota. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
All right. Hello, I am Sarah Johnson. I am the program director at the Karen Organization of Minnesota.
Good morning, Chen Zhong, and members of the committee. My name is Etta Ku, co-executive director with the Karen Organization of Minnesota. The Karen Organization of Minnesota is the first social services organization established by the Karen refugees from Burma. Karen refugees began coming to Minnesota in the early 2000s, and the population in Minnesota is nearing 20,000 right now. Over the past 15 years, KOM has a long history of creating and adapting programs based on the evolving needs of Karen and other refugees community we serve. Karen refugees are eager to find work to support their families, pursue education, and to contribute to the community. However, they often face language and education barriers that prevent them from accessing training that would help them advance their skills and obtain jobs with family-sustaining wages. Nearly 70% of refugees from Burma lack a high school diploma, and many households are earning less than $35,000 a year. Labor force disengagement is high, with only 65% of working age adults in the community being employed, compared to the state average of 80%. In response to this, KOM began creating our own workforce training programs in partnership with local adult-based education providers that heavily emphasize contextualized industry-specific literacy development within career pathways that offer higher wages. Since 2016, we have supported over 300 immigrants and refugees to earn workforce credentials in construction, CDL, human services, interpreting, and manufacturing. We anticipate these programs will serve over 200 individuals in the next 16 months. While we are grateful for the competitive grants awarded to KM from Deeds and other funders that allow us to create and grow our programming, we know that continued robust investment is needed to ensure that the current and other new American populations have accessible training options that met them where they are. This direct appropriation will support KOM to ensure that KOM frontline staff are trained and able to implement effective workforce development programming. KOM has the tools and resources needed to effectively track participant programs and evaluate program efficiency. And KOM has funding available to participants that increase outcomes in training and help more people make transition to stable family sustaining careers. We urge that the committee consider funding this direct appropriation. We would like to thank and appreciate Chair Jean for inviting us for this opportunity. Thank you very much.
Discussion on the organization. Seeing none, thank you very much for the work you do in the community. And thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you.
Next is Heather Watchful Repower. Good morning. Welcome to committee. You state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Zhang, and the entire committee. My name is Heather Walsh, and I'm the CEO of Repowered. Our nonprofit legal name is Jobs Foundation, and so we go by Jobs Foundation, doing business as Repowered. I'm here today to offer a heartfelt thank you to Chair Zhang, Representative Frazier, and the entire committee for including us in the provision for the fiscal year 2024. Omnibus bill. Jobs Foundation has a proven track record of increasing employability of previously incarcerated individuals while reducing recidivism in a high-risk population. The appropriated funds for Jobs Foundation are critical this year for the organization to deliver on the high-quality programming, such as digital and financial literacy, support services like on-site mental health services, both in group and individual therapy, ongoing safety enhancements like laser assists on our forklifts so that they are trained on the latest standards, and economic support in the form of participant pay. When we bring someone on in our work readiness program, we're making a commitment to pay wages for up to 18 months. This is a significant commitment. These individuals work in an electronics recycling facility building their work ethic and investing their time and energy on personal development, life skills, and goal setting. And they pay taxes the entire time they're in our program, which benefits all of us. Historically, Jobs Foundation has self-funded our work readiness program through our e-waste work, but markets change, and this year our program is budgeted to be self-funded at 80%. These appropriated funds are very important for us to cover the gap in that budget. This is our first ask ever, and we are not requesting these funds lightly. We are asking because of an immediate need. Thank you all for being here on this committee at this time. Your impact is immeasurable. Your leadership and commitment to funding critical initiatives, making Minnesotans more employable, are to be applauded, and I assure you that everyone at Jobs Foundation thanks you. So let me finish with one big thought for everyone. As you reflect on this session, I'd like you to think about a world, a future world, where what would it be like if we were not known for the biggest mistake we've ever made, but instead known for the biggest gift and the biggest strength we have. At Jobs Foundation, we help people rediscover their gifts, powering forward together. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Welch, for your testimony. Any discussion? Seeing none, thank you so much for the work you're doing, for being here this morning. Next is Sarah Klein from Equispace. Good morning, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, and thank you, Chair Zhang and members of the committee. I'm Sarah Klein, Executive Director of Equispace. I also want to thank Representative Censor Mira for sponsoring House File 3708, and thank you to the committee for inclusion in the omnibus bill. This first-time funding request will provide support to 20-plus nonprofits and over 250 employees in St. Paul. Nonprofit staff make up 13% of Minnesota's workforce, and like all workers, need access to training, technical assistance, and support to ensure they do their jobs well. In addition, by creating space, shared services, and training opportunities, we create efficiencies that allow many of these nonprofits to hire new staff to provide vital services to our community. I can assure you we will be good stewards and accountable to this funding. Thank you so much to the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Klein. Any discussion? Seeing none, thank you for being here this morning. Next is Jane Gautman from the International Institute. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Xiong and members of the committee. I'm Jane Grotman, the Executive Director of the International Institute of Minnesota. I'd like to begin my remarks by thanking an extra special thank you to Representative Censor Mura for sponsoring our bill, House File 3709, and also to the committee for hearing our previous testimony and my testimony again this morning, and for including us in the provisional omnibus bill. Thank you. So the Institute is asking you to support our newly developed business career pathway. It's a first-time funding request for this pathway. The pathway is also supported by private foundation and philanthropy. Two examples of that are the Thrivent Foundation and the Opus Foundation. Pathway graduates in 2023 were placed in assistant manager, supervisory, and office-based positions. 37 graduates were employed in 2023 and had a one-year retention rate of 92%. These requested funds will allow us to expand this pathway to serve 150 students, doubling the number of students that we currently serve, and increasing the number employed by 30%. So thank you very much for your support of new Americans in our community. Your support in the past and this support helps them integrate more quickly and realize their ambitions by quickly finding employment that advances their wages. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Kaufman. Any discussion? Seeing none, thank you very much for being here this morning and the work you do.
Thank you.
Next is Boulder Options. Good morning and welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
(Clears
Good morning, Chair Jong and members of the committee. My name is Daryl Thompson, President and CEO of Boulder Options, where I've been for 29 years. We're a youth program, mentoring program here in the Twin Cities and also in Rochester, serving youth 10 to 14 years old. We are honored and excited about being included in this bill. It will allow us to achieve potentially a lifetime dream that we've had to be able to serve youth once they finish our program. We've been doing it on kind of a not even a shoestring budget, just with a quarter time, eighth time person, but this will allow us to expand that exponentially and really feed that workforce pipeline. We had a young man testify here that talked about the opportunity for him to go to Olive Garden with his mentor, and we would like to make that not a special thing. We'd like for our young people to realize they can go to Olive Garden, they can go wherever they want to eat and have that chance and that opportunity. So for Christian, for Boulder Options, for myself and our staff, we're honored to be here today, and we're excited about this opportunity. So thank you very much for including us in this bill. And if you have any questions, I'm here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Any questions? See none. Thank you very much for being here this morning.
Thank you. Thank you.
Next is MFRP, Minnesota Family Resiliency Program. Good morning. Welcome to committee. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Andy Eilers with Kirstofferson Advocates. Jean Keenan with the Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership was unable to attend today, so I'll be reading her testimony. The statewide Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership, or MFRP, wishes to express our strong support for your proposed omnibus bill. The partnership of the government and nonprofit sectors increases the positive impacts on Minnesota across the state. We're grateful to you and each of the members for your support. Thank you very much for including MFRP in this bill. We were thrilled to hear this news. This funding will allow us to increase our capacity to provide family stabilization services to some of Minnesota's most barriered and unseen job seekers. We are so grateful to you for the funding and for your longstanding support of our work to help marginalized women, particularly BIPOC women and their families, to stabilize and become self-sufficient. It is very gratifying when one's hard work to lift people out of poverty is recognized and validated. Once again, thank you all for all that you have done for the Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership and the individuals we serve. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Eilers. Any questions? See you now. Thank you for being this morning.
Thank you.
Next is Julie Brecky from Hired. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Zhang and members of the committee. My name is Julie Brecky. I'm the executive director at Hired, and I'm really honored to be here with you today. I want to start by thanking Representative Frazier for being our chief author and bringing this concept and the bill forward today, or not today, but actually on March 20th. And as you know, Hired is a multi-service workforce development nonprofit working across the Twin Cities. We worked with nearly 4,000 individuals last year, all of whom are low income. 72% are people of color and 72% are women. I can tell you that in our 56 years of connecting people with family sustaining services and employment, we know that employment equity doesn't stop at getting a job. After people have worked hard to upskill and prepare for a job, most often our contracts and grants end, which means that our services and trusting relationships we've built with people stop. Our funding supports superficial monthly connections for a brief time, even though the people we've been working with are experiencing a very fragile transition to employment. Hired's proposed bill addresses this persistent gap. It's about helping people navigate a strong start to their jobs. In today's workforce and economy, many of the people we work with face historic systemic and situational barriers to not just finding a job, but keeping a job. We have found that they need on-site services and mobile services, including coaching, helping understand the benefits of their employer, helping to find needed community resources, as well as support services to address unexpected emergencies or re-emerging barriers once they've found that job. Thank you for hearing my testimony on March 20th and also Jim and Cook's testimony. He is the second shift supervisor at Medtronic that provided video testimony, and he shared that in our pilot project, the people definitely needed help navigating the workplace and life barriers to keep their jobs. That pilot project was really great and very successful and demonstrated the difference that intensive job retention services can make. hired us to propose this bill because we believe it will increase job retention and jobs with family-sustaining wages, lead to individual job growth and career advancement, help people stabilize their families and build wealth, all while building talent pipelines for employers, as well as lowering turnover costs. Again, thank you. We're really honored to be included in this finance bill and really appreciate your consideration.
Thank you. Any questions for members? See, now thank you so much for being here this morning, Ms. Brecky.
Thank you.
Next is Women Venture. Good morning and welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Zhang, Lead Baker, and committee members. My name is Leanne Rasichak. My pronouns are she, her, and I am CEO of Women Venture. I thank you for including us in the appropriation of $1 million to our organization in your committee's bill to support Minnesota's vital family child care businesses. I also want to thank Representative Katiza Watoon for sponsoring House File 4943. With the funds provided by this committee last session, only since January, Women Venture has deployed grant and loan funding for 28 child care businesses totaling nearly $400,000, which expended all planned dollars for calendar year 2024. The need is real. We have a wait list for those seeking funding support when we reopen applications for calendar year 2025, and the need is statewide. Women Ventures 2023 funds support child care providers throughout Minnesota, from the Twin Cities, Detroit Lakes, Waconia, Mayer, Schaefer, Litchfield, and more. The $1 million in House File 5205 allows us to accelerate and expand support of child care provider services throughout Minnesota. With these funds, we will maintain and create child care slots while also addressing Minnesota's workforce shortage. With these funds, we will support child care providers through business training, workshops, and shared services, and to create materials that could be used free of charge for startup, expansion, and operation of child care businesses statewide, with the goal of helping new and existing child care businesses in underserved areas of the state so that they can become sustainable and profitable. We'll provide financial assistance to women in child care businesses in the form of loans, forgivable loans, and grants. We'll create a program to provide providers with the essential resources and support they need to achieve compliance with health and safety regulations, fulfill state licensing requirements, and become part of a professional community of child care providers. We'll also identify support systems to help navigate child care business owners looking to transfer ownership. With these valuable resources, we anticipate deploying $620,000 of affordable capital access through grants, loans, and forgivable loans, which would serve more than 60 providers with grant funds and 10 or less providers with loans. Through training and workshops, we estimate 200 individuals will be served across Minnesota with an intention to represent every county in the state. Chair and committee members, thank you for your consideration, your continued support of Women Venture through House File 5205.
Thank you. Discussion. See, now thank you very much for being here this morning. Next is the Broken Park City Council. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Zhang, Chair Hassan, Lead Baker, and committee members. I'm Nicole Klinowski. I'm a city council representative for Brooklyn Park. I'd like to say first, it is really an honor to be here among so many dedicated people working to better their communities and the state of Minnesota. On behalf of Mayor Winston, who is traveling and cannot be here today, the rest of the city council, and our partners at Medical Alley, Greater MSP, and the Skilled Trades, I'd like to thank Chair Zhang, Chair Hassan, for including investment in our workforce development efforts and the establishment of the Brooklyn Park Biotech Innovation District in your bill. BrookLink, our workforce development program, and our small business center with both office and retail space reflect our commitment to developing our local workforce, building community wealth, and supporting entrepreneurship and small business. These investments by Brooklyn Park and the establishment of the Biotech Innovation District help lay the foundation for our city and residents to harness the benefit of Minnesota's leadership in the medical and biotech industries. As a diverse metropolitan suburb boasting a population of nearly 90,000 residents and an existing med and biotech corporate infrastructure, Brooklyn Park is the perfect place for a vibrant biotech innovation district that is estimated to generate 10,000 new jobs and 3,000 additional housing units, playing a crucial role in addressing workforce disparities that disproportionately impact the BIPOC community in Brooklyn Park and beyond. Again, thank you, Chair Zhang, Chair Hassan, and Lead Baker, and all the committee members, thank you for your time and your investment in the city of Brooklyn Park, which is an investment in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, council member. Any questions? See now, thank you so much for being here this morning.
Thank you.
Next is Aaron Zimmerman from the P-Fund. Good morning and welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed with testimony.
Good morning, Chair Zhang, Lee Baker, and committee members. My name is Aaron Zimmerman. I'm the executive director of P-Fund Foundation. On behalf of dozens of small businesses, nonprofits, families, and new Minnesotans we serve, I'm here to say thank you for including this as a one-time appropriation of $2 million to P-Fund to continue our work throughout the state. This appropriation represents an investment in the workforce development and job skills training needed to meet the medical, mental health, social service care of LGBTQ plus Minnesotans. With these funds, we will be able to train several new doctors, healthcare providers from across the state to provide life-saving and life-affirming care to LGBTQ individuals, families, and youth. Additionally, these funds will ensure that LGBTQ folks and their families that are fleeing from hostile environments can land here and be job ready, ensuring that they have access to healthcare, mental health care, housing, and job skills and employment. When we invest in making Minnesota an inclusive state, we see the return several fold as these new Minnesotans work to continue to contribute to their communities. Chair Zhang and members of the committee, thank you so much for your consideration and continued support of P-Fund Foundation.
Thank you. Questions for members? Seeing none, thank you very much for being here this morning.
Thank you.
Next is Patia Tao from Minnesota Zezol. Good morning and welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, and good morning to the chair and community members. My name is Pachia, and I am a senior at St. Cloud State University. I am a Tote youth leader who helps support teacher in the classroom at the 10-day iStrive Hmong Camp for preschool to high school student at North Hennepin Community College. As an education major, it's a great opportunity to gain experience being in the classroom and work with kids, giving back to my own community and support the amazing work that Minnesota Zhejiang is doing to help preserve and cultivate our Hmong language and culture. In the last two summers, it has been healing for me because of the environment. We are basically a big family at iStrive Summer Hmong Camp. Last year, I was with a group of 30 plus second graders, and it was just me and my lead teacher, and almost every day, staff or other youth leaders who had time on their hand would offer to help my class out because literally I was losing my mind. And that's what I love about iStrive, that we can spot where help is needed and we are ready to jump in to help. Additionally, the leadership training and mentorships at iStrive helped me become more in tune with myself. Furthermore, it was a really rewarding internship experience because you get to build relationships with the kids and see a part of your inner child in these kids that attend or that you work with. I believe you should give money to MZZ to help young people like me who don't have much guidance with my career choices and who don't have connections to Hmong entrepreneurs and professionals to mentor, because when I started to think about what I wanted to do with my life, which I knew that I wanted to work with kids, I thought that teaching was the only way to go if I wanted to work with kids. After spending 3.5 to 4 years of my college year, I realized teaching wasn't for me. So I decided to change my major to planning and community development, and it has been the best choice of my life. Imagine what MZZ can do if funded for so many Hmong youth who are lost in their career choice. The amazing leadership team can cultivate a workforce youth development program through a Hmong lens similar to iStrive that teaches leadership life skills, mentorship opportunities, and internships experiences.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Tao, for your testimony. Welcome to the committee. Bang, go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yashongshen Zhu, chair, committee members. Gulunbeho Bang Yang, Guyadu executive director, Nyarota, Minnesota, Zhejiang. At Minnesota Zhejiang, we blend Hmong language, culture, and identity work to heal the intergenerational trauma wounds, educating across generations. Minnesota Digital has worked strategically the last several years to create workforce framework to help Hmong youths who may not be so engaged in the regular school setting to have a chance to discover their greatness and dream big through our I Strive Hmong Camp. For example, MZZ offered a real estate investment course with leadership and mindset components. We had over 60 Hmong youths between the ages of 15 and 21 register for the six-week-long Saturday course, intended for students to learn about the basics of real estate from real estate mentors. There was a final assignment where students were split into two teams, given a project to evaluate, and then later presented their findings to three panel judges. The judges voted on the strategy, highest return on investment, and applied knowledge. Parents and community members filled the room at the final presentation, expressed their gratitude for Minnesota Digital for hosting such an innovative career pathway class, and wished that they had that same opportunity when they were younger, and that their path might have been different if they had been exposed to experiences such as this one, especially taught by professionals who looked like them. After the success of the real estate course, we applied for grant funding to create multiple career pathways with mentorship and internship opportunity for young people in the field of teaching, nursing, finance, real estate, trade sectors, but was declined. However, we will not give up as the needs and demands are great in this field. In these fields, MZZ have a proven track record working with Hmong youths, parents, cities, school systems, decades beyond the 4 years of existence since we became a nonprofit. MZZ can provide the missing link to what schools can't do for Hmong youths in terms of career development. We are ready to begin the work when you believe in us. Wacho.
Wacho Bang and Pachia for sharing your story and the work that you're doing in the community. Any questions from members? See none. Ocho, meto na. Next is Acer, A-C-E-R. Good morning. Welcome to committee. Please take your name for record and proceed.
Sure. Good morning, Chair Zhang. Good morning, committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to share once again about our work. We are requesting a $150,000 appropriation for our workforce work. And the purpose for the funds is to train community members in high-demand entry-level healthcare fields. Our work is, most of our work is centered in the fostering suburbs. And I will talk about the work that we're doing to fill a gap that we see in this area. Most of our students are seeking culturally appropriate training. So a lot of the students and the training that we provide for them is culturally appropriate, and it caters to where they are at the stage in their lives. When we provide the training, we have day classes. We also have night classes that caters to the needs of the students that we serve, because a lot of schools do not offer night classes. Also, we give people an opportunity to get into an entry level of CNA training. It is takes about 6 to 8 weeks for the training, and by the end of those 8 weeks, they're able to get into a job that pays them a livable wage, that whereby they're able to take care of their families. The other training that the students receive that we have seen from our students is a lot of them are not computer proficient. And so if they go to a regular school, they have difficulty. And so we offer them that computer training also so that they can be successful in their class, and also so that they can be successful when they enter into the job market. Additionally, most of the students that we serve do not drive, do not have access to transportation, and so it's difficult for them to go into the other regular training institutions. And so we see our work as being important, and we're filling a gap, and we thank the community for giving us the opportunity to ask for this funding, and we hope that you'll consider us. Thank you.
Thank you. Can you state your name for the record, please?
Spell my name?
Just state your name.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Nalima Sitati Munene. I'm the executive director of Acer.
Thank you. Any questions? See, now thank you very much for being here this morning and for the work that you're doing in the community.
Thank you.
Next is GMCC. Good morning and welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Adrienne Dorn. I am the executive director of GMCC. We were founded as Greater Minneapolis Council of Churches, and we are an interfaith nonprofit social services agency that has been serving our communities for 118 years in the Midtown Phillips neighborhood. Thank you so much, Chair Zhang, and the committee for including this program in the supplemental budget. Funding will support our out-of-school academic enrichment, career exploration, and workforce development program called Lake Street Youth Labs. It includes a all-day 9 through 5, Monday through Friday, 5-week summer camp for young people in grades 1 through 8 that offers a variety of STEAM curricula delivered by our teachers and our partners who are experts in a variety of subject matters. It also includes after-school courses during the school year in partnership with Anderson Middle School and weekend Saturday STEAM curricula. This year, we are going to be adding a older youth leadership committee to provide an opportunity for professional development and to ensure that their voices are heard in the design and operations of our program. We are also incorporating an apprenticeship program for our older youth who will be paid and trained to help us work on our summer camp, offering an opportunity not just for professional development, but also for a paid summer job. I'm really excited to be able to continue and expand this program. Funding will allow us to increase the number of youth served, but also to increase the hours and days of programming. So thank you so much, committee and Chair Zhang. We really appreciate the support.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, well, thank you so much for being here this morning and sharing about the work that you do for community. Next is Inspire MSP. Good morning. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Dan Ryan, the executive director of Inspire MSP. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee. Special thanks to Rep. Frazier for being such a champion of our historically excluded youth. We use the phrase, you can't be what you can't see, often. And when you think about that, all of us are in a chair today because we all went through a process of dreaming, learning, and becoming who we are. Our lived experience leads us down that journey through different means and different support. Today is really exciting for Inspire MSP because today you all are supporting and enabling us to drive deeper engagement with youth in the creative industry. We're providing access and exposure to creative places and jobs, and we're providing choice for inspiration for our youth to dream, so they may go down that path of learning and becoming. If we in Minnesota want to continue to drive a diverse and inclusive creative industry, if we want to continue to be in the top 10 in the US for the creative industry, then today is an opportunity to support that, to show that all voices are welcome, all voices are needed, and all voices help to drive a more inclusive and dynamic creative industry. Today is a wonderful day. We're just getting started with our impact, and we look forward to many more times like this showing the impact that these funds are having.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions from members? Seeing none, thank you so much for being here this morning.
Thank you.
Next is Lou Tao and Mary Ann from Indigenous Roots. Good morning. Welcome to committee. Mr. Tao and Ms. Ann Correz, please state your names for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. Special thanks to Representative Samantha Vang as well. I just want to reemphasize the importance of our bill. Just recently, April 3rd, our students and myself performed for the Timberwolves halftime, and I just want to touch base on that experience just because of how important our students, that event was for them. We had 8 students, and we had about 5 instructors that performed, ranging from 10 to 17. So our youngest is 10 that actually performed at the halftime show. The importance of that show was showing them 5 key things, so punctuality, so arriving on time. A lot of the students actually arrived earlier than myself, so showing that it is important to show up.
I love it.
professionalism. We're in front of NBA players, and so it's being professional, being the setting where it's, you know, high level quality. Self-discipline, so making sure that if they're backstage, they're already preparing, they're still preparing, they're not just fooling around. So, and then fourth is the confidence. So being being able to perform in front of thousands of people is like a super important trait to have. And then five, communication skills. So talking to each other, how do we work as a team? Because when you're backstage, it's about just communicating and also working with your coach, also your mentors. Like I said, I want to thank you again for including this on this bill, on the finance bill. And I said, I want to make sure like we help support the success of the future economy, because our students and the youth want to work. So all these students, we mentioned about working, supporting our studio, and all of them just on board. So how can we help? So supporting this bill means a lot to myself and the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tao. Ms. Corris.
Hello, my name is Marianne Quiroz. Thank you to all our esteemed representatives for your continued work and dedication to all our mini Xhota communities. There are many ways to boost our economy, but a consistent driving force is ensuring people have access to a meaningful livelihood and purpose. I actually met Lou at a very young age, and he actually was the connection to the students at Battle Creek Middle School that wanted to do breakdance class. And so we provided, I was like, okay, you guys can have an open breakdance session, but you have to go to class. And Lou came in, that was many, many years ago, almost 10 years ago, over 10 years ago. We look really young still, I know. Over 10 years ago, and provided him the opportunity to work as an after-school program instructor. And so it just shows a lot about his commitment, his work ethic, and how he's passing on that legacy to his students and to the family. So this bill would support Cypherside Indigenous Roots to boost the creative economy by providing funding to our creative instructors, to our artists. So thank you for your work and investing in arts and culture.
Thank you, Marianne Cortez. Question, Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you both. I was attending the game during the during your performance at halftime. It was awesome. So I just wanted to say that. Thank you for all the work you're doing for our young people.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Any further discussion? All right. Well, thank you so much, Marianne and Lou, for being here this morning.
We matched today, Chairman.
That's right. Okay, members. First of all, I want to thank all the members of the public for being here this morning and sharing your stories and the work that you're doing in the community. And so now we are going to go to the A4 amendment, which our nonpartisan staff went over it earlier. So any discussions on the amendment? Lead Baker.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. Part of the D4 amendment here, I do see that we've got some additions and deletions. And I guess I just wanted to highlight the importance of recognizing when we may have to take something off the list. And there's some questions that I have, maybe either as I kind of understand the pathway of this. I know you got a couple of maybe the amendments we want to cover first, but we want to make sure that our accountability to this sort of big day for a lot of folks that are being considered for this bill, and I will ask later about what the pathway is after today, but we have to make sure that we have accountability to our taxpayers and the folks that are paying the premium. So again, I appreciate recognizing that one of the providers needed to be removed from this bill because of some questions that we have, and we need to make sure that we do this due diligence. But I am concerned that provider that we did take off is still listed under the deed website as a active service provider. So that's something that we can talk to about with deed, maybe when we're talking about getting out the grants. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for that.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the A4 amendment? All those in favor approving the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. The amendment is approved. Next is the A3 amendment from Representative Wings. To your amendment, Representative Wings.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. Thank you, Rep. Hassan. I move the A3 amendment to House File 5205. Boy, this is a hard act to follow with so many great nonprofits here and doing great work in your communities. This is going to be a little dry, so I'm going to move as fast as I can without missing, I think, the key points. Just a little bit of a background. Great collaboration I had in the Veterans Committee with Chair Newton and Vice Chair Elkins in developing the framework that is in the A3 Amendment. And that is basically accountability, transparency, and effectiveness for all the money that we dedicated to nonprofits through the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. That passed unanimously through the Veterans Committee. In discussion and collaboration on a bipartisan bill last month, HF 4926, which is for workforce in collaboration with Vice Chair Brand, it's the grantee evaluation. So it takes those same elements, accountability, transparency, and effectiveness, and puts them in a success metric. I provided a copy of the Bill 4926 to Deed. Deed said they collect much of this information. I've also requested a fiscal note. And what this does is really that it delivers on the promise that we make to the nonprofits and all of our folks that are going through the workforce training. So they're really getting what we promised them. And also there's accountability to the taxpayer and then our, our word in good governance. There are 9 points in this particular report, and the way this is worked, it's an annual report that that nonprofits would provide to Deed, and Deed would collect and then provide to the chair and the vice chair and the lead of each of the committee annually. And basically, the first couple of points are basic data: the purpose of the nonprofit, the amount of grants. The next grouping is the amount of graduates of the workforce program by that nonprofit, and then those graduates being placed in a livable wage job. Then there's a little bit of a metric on what is the effectiveness rate for the placement, and then the cost effectiveness, and lastly, there's the charitable giving ratio. Much of that we've talked about. There's also a provision in there for future Minnesotans. For those people not yet in Minnesota, but will be coming to Minnesota. One of those things we talked about, I think, in the dislocated is for our military veterans that are our military currently serving that are assigned to Minnesota and their spouse will be dislocated. They could apply and be incorporated in this. Again, the intent here is accountability, transparency, and effectiveness. And if I can quote just a couple of people today, Ms. Abdul Brown talked about jobs being the best crime-fighting element. And then I just see equity and dignity in having a livable wage job where you can take care of yourself, you can provide for your family, you can invest and buy a house and live the American dream, or as Mr. Redd said, the American reality, and being prepared for that. So in this committee, chair, fellow committee members, I thank you for your consideration of the A3 amendment. For our workforce so that they can build our communities and have a thriving job and career. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Weens. I believe we have Deed here, who also shared that a lot of the asks in this amendment are already being done through the department. So, Ms. Dario Dannon. Good morning. Welcome, committee. State your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. Again, Darielle Dannon. I am the Government Relations Director for Deed. And, Chair, I'm just going to elaborate a little bit on what I think was mentioned by a number of members, is that we do have statutory requirements already under, Minnesota Statute 116L.98, that statute requires us as an agency to track workforce program outcomes. And I'm going to share a couple of those with you if members are maybe not familiar with that work. I'm also happy to share with the committee, we do an extensive report. It's called the Uniform Report Card. You know what, I'm going to hold it up for a quick second what this looks like. Let me read the set. It's going to reload itself, of course. Here we go. But I'm going to show you just, members, if you ever want to go to the Uniform Report Card and look at sort of what participants look like for any of the programs for any year that they've been funded, the demographic of those individuals, what they were paid as a wage before and then after they did a training program, the training programs they participated in. That is all information that we provide on our website. We update that on a quarterly basis. And then individuals are tracked. Every single individual who's in a program that is state funded is tracked through the system. It's actually even slightly more extensive than that, and we track folks across from the DHS programs as well. So and so back to that statute that has a number of these requirements already. Sorry, I have many statutes up right now, members. But we already track the total number of participants enrolled in each program, the median pre-enrollment wages for the participants, the total number, I'm not going to read every single part of this, but total number of participants with zero income, the total number of participants enrolled in training, the total number of participants enrolled in training by occupation group, participants who's exited the program, average enrollment duration, number of exited participants who completed training, the folks who attained a credential, the folks who, we also track folks who are retained in that position a year later, the total cost of the program, cost per participant, credential received by the participant, and cost of credential, the administrative cost of the program, and ethnics, gender, and some other details. So we do have an extensive amount of tracking that we are doing on programs. I would encourage members to maybe look at that tracking if we're wanting to make adjustments. We could have some conversation about that. But we do have an extensive system at present.
Lead Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I want to thank Mr. or Representative Weens for bringing this forward. You know, there's a lot of scrutiny on all of us right now with the dollars that we grant out to nonprofits and for cities and everybody that gets money from us to do a program. DEED, I think, actually has a pretty robust system. They've got a thing online here. But maybe my question, I know you're still very behind from last year's work. We have a lot to get out yet, 130 some million that has yet to be executed from our work here. And I know that that's a daunting task. And we're doing more here today through the Workforce Development Fund. However, what I'm nervous about looking at this stuff a little deeper, and there's been a lot of good information in these packets that have just kind of been given to us quickly here, is some of these 990s are not accurate, not current. And I want to know from DEED standpoint, what are some real important triggers for you to say yes or no to folks that are either current with their 990s or not, or if they've had it before? Because I'm seeing some in this packet, Mr. Chair, that are not current. And I want to address that with the members today, because I want to be careful that we don't find ourselves in some of that same horrible headlines like Feed Our Future did. You know, and I want to make sure we do our due diligence to all of these folks, because we've had a lot of really good presentations and there's a lot of really good vendors, but it just takes one or two. And I just want to ask the department, how do you handle some of those things that are not up to speed, up to date, and how do you handle those?
Lee Baker, for Ms. Danner, before you answer that, some of the 990s are dated, but then we were able to receive some updated ones. They were not put in here, so if you want those most recent one, feel free to reach out to the organizations, or our staff will send out the updated one, because they all came in very late as we were moving forward. So, Ms. Danning.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Baker. One of the things that the legislature passed last year, and I think to your question, and reflecting on, I think, some of the missteps that potentially did happen with Feeding Our Futures, is that the legislature created a whole new section of statute, which this is what I meant by I had many statutes up here, but 16B.981 requires all state agencies to do a financial review of grantees and business subsidy recipients before we're awarding funding. So there's an extensive amount of information in this. So we as an agency, so as the chair referenced, sometimes folks maybe here are not getting an updated 990, but we are doing an extensive fiscal review, not just including a 990. I would be happy to share the review with you. It's extensive. It goes many pages. It goes through, obviously making sure folks have a 990, but looking for the fiscal controls organizations have to make sure that they're tracking state dollars appropriately. It looks at making sure they have proper board members in place, treasurers and other things, making sure that they have audited financial statements, It also ensures that they're properly registered with the Secretary of State's office and make sure that they're paying taxes, that there are no federal liens or state liens on their properties. So there is a fairly extensive process. We as an agency also, sometimes when we do that review, we do find, and in the statutory language it says, that we can find red flags that might pop up in those fiscal reviews. And then our job is to work with that grantee. Assuming it's a direct appropriation, we as an agency are going to assume that you as the legislature want us to make sure that organization gets funding, if possible. And so then we are going to work with that organization to help identify, we found a couple of red flags, let's see if we can resolve those red flags and then make sure you get those state funds. But we do then consider that organization, if there are red flags flagged, we consider them high risk. And that means that we're sending a monitor out to look through their financials and reconcile any funding that the state provided to them with their general ledger and verifying that they did indeed do the training, procure the items that they were supposed to be purchasing, whatever it is. So we do an extensive amount of work verifying things. And so hopefully that provides a little bit more comfort that there is a more extensive review sort of after this process.
Lead Baker.
And I get, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that. But when we get, you know, again, all this information, and if we don't have accurate information in the little bit of time we get to see them, if they're 2-3 years old, doesn't do me any good at this point. You know, we just got to make sure that, deed, yes, you have the final execution of the contract. You have the last step of the enforcement and the oversight of our resources in Minnesota that are going places to help people and help organizations do good work. I just want to make sure the public knows that my expectations are that these reports are complete to us. So we sitting up late at night going through our forms and preparing ourselves for these meetings, we flag some items that don't seem to be current. And we still see flags of people that were connected to the Feeding Our Future problems that we had is still as listed as a provider under deed that mm-hmm. has a flag for me. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, are they flagged with you and are they being set aside? Do we pause this? I mean, again, they're not in trouble at this point, but they're flagged. And I guess I just need to make sure that, and I think this is to Representative Weens' his amendment, his very good amendment, to just say maybe a lot of it is being done. But if we can actually just tweak it a little bit more and make sure that the folks receiving the dollars are checking a few more boxes because that's what's being expected of us. Mm-hmm. Our folks at home are expecting us to get this right. So again, thank you for the DE 3, Representative Weens. I think this is a good one. I hope that the committee can support this, taking it forward. Thank you for that update.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No. Motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. We are now back at the DE1 amendment as amended. All those in favor of adopting the DE1 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. We now have the bill, House File 5205, as amended before us. Any discussion on the bill? Lead Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will you, Mr. Chair, to you, what is the next step for our work here? Do you expect this? You know, with the other body, there's a lot of different parts with other committees that kind of come together with three over here, and maybe it's two or three over there. Is there going to be a conference committee set up, and what do you see here now as the next step for final clarity of the bill?
We are going to move this bill to the Ways to Be Mean Committee or Ways to Mean Committee, and then from there, I'm assuming it will go to the floor. In terms of conference committee, I haven't had a conversation with leadership.
Yeah.
We are on our own. So
okay.
After
we merge with the Economic Development Committee.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did know that Chair Hassan actually is the author of this. And again, I wanted to just say to the couple of these organizations that are not current, maybe they're in the emails ready to come to me. I'm not sure that they are available, but I hope that if in the future we don't get those things by a certain time, that it does raise flags for us to make sure we can't keep doing this if they aren't keeping up with at least the minimum standards of what we expect, which is the 990s, which is to us sort of a really important document to show and to be audited outside of the organization, a legitimate claim that this organization is doing what they say they're going to be doing and what their percentages are, what the salaries are, and like the agency said too, you know, who's on their board, all those kind of things. This is important stuff. So again, I have a couple here that I was going to ask about, but I think I'll take it offline. I will see if it's current. But we need to be diligent. We need to say no when they're not ready for this. And I just, you know, I want to support all of this work today. I can't because I'm still got a lot of concerns about this, these few vendors, these few opportunities. You didn't want to take Representative Weens's amendment today to tighten things down a little bit more, which I don't think is going to be a burden on anybody because they're doing most of it already. So I wish we could accept this today, and we'll see where we go in the next steps, Mr. Chair. So thank you.
Lee Baker, we will take the amendment. There will be an additional cost. We don't have any general fund targets. And furthermore, you've heard from Deed for what they're doing already, so we're asking them to do what they are already doing.
Mr. Chair, just...
I'm talking. And so this notion that somehow we are not being accountable, it's very misleading. That's why we have a very thorough background check with our department. That is why we are all elected. That's what our job is supposed to do. That's what we do. We look for things, and if there are any issues, if we have an issue with it, we talk about it, and we discuss it, and we take it out. That's what we did. And so that being said, Rep. Hassan, any closing statements on the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to all the community members who are in this room today and for the past few months trying to highlight the need for, you know, investment in workforce across the state of Minnesota. We have heard, you know, this from Deed. We've heard it from, you know, our community that our workforce is in crisis and we need, you know, intentional investment in our workforce. This is a great bill. I want to highlight that all of us want to be accountable to taxpayers' money, that we're all in agreement with. And I strongly believe that Deed has the means and the tools to hold people accountable, and this is a great bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I want to ask for a roll call, please.
Roll call has been requested.
We have members who are in other committees.
All right. Hold on. Just want to remind folks that if you have bills in here, you can't support your bills. Want that to be known for the record.
That means I'll take Okay. All right. Oh, she is included? Okay. All right, Chair Zhang?
Aye.
Representative Brand?
Aye.
Lead Baker?
No.
Representative Becker Finn?
She's excused.
Excused. Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Harder?
No.
Representative Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Hemmingsen-Yeager?
Aye.
Representative Nelson?
No.
Representative Ryer?
Aye.
Representative Sensenmura? Excused. Representative Weens? Representative Zvezinkar?
Aye.
We have 7 ayes and 4 nays.
7 ayes, 4 nays. The motion carries. The bill... it's on its way to Ways and Means Committee. Members, we are still going to meet next week to go over the Pay Family Relief Bill. It is scheduled for Wednesday afternoon or evening. We have not had that squared out yet with leadership staff. Oh, okay. And so watch out in your emails for the information on back on the bill. Nonpartisan staff is instructed to make any technical changes to reflect the will of the committee. What was that?
That was just in case.
Okay. All right. Seeing no more items on the agenda, we are adjourned to next week.